from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of the Encore Vocal Arts next concert, The Magic of Fred Waring.
I'll find out about the upcoming Etheridge Night Festival's Evening with the Legends.
And I'll get the lowdown on the St. Beno Fest at the Athenaeum. Plus, we'll have our Arts Calendar Week Hall.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Long before we watched Glee, if you can even remember that, there was a style of singing that swept the nation, and one of its creators was Fred Waring. Chris Luva, artistic director of Encore Vocal Arts, decided to explore the heritage of show choirs with a concert called The Magic of Fred Waring, Father of the Glee Phenomenon. Sharon invited Chris, who's just finishing up his doctorate, to talk about Waring and his young Pennsylvanians and Waring's influence.
All right, so I don't think I know anyone who hasn't gotten the Glee / Smash bug, including you and your company. But the Fred Waring tie-in, explain where this idea came from.
Well, I like so many, had the opportunity to be in a show choir growing up in high school, certainly. And then was part of the Indiana University Singing Hoosiers when I was at IU. And so there was a kind of a natural fascination with that. And then when the show came out, there was, again, you know, some rebirth and excitement for the idea of choral singing. Although, you know, as you know, there is a lot of speculation. Choral purists will sometimes run the other way screaming when they talk about Glee. But most of us that are in music education are just really happy that it's highlighting issues in music education and the idea of arts in the schools in whatever format, even if it's not the kind of choral singing that most of us typically do in a school, although it's not that far afield from it.
So for people who maybe didn't sing in school or don't know the difference, can you briefly define what differentiates a swing or show choir from a traditional choir?
Sure. Well, I think that at least in Indiana, the cradle, if you will, of the show choir, it's really the addition of dance and sort of showmanship to the presentation. And that's something that within Encore Vocal Arts, we've really strived toward is not to dance, because I think the members would probably revolt.
Yes, if some of your singers are listening, don't worry.
Yeah. But there will be a little bit of small gestures in this concert. But yeah, the addition of showmanship and how do you express a piece. And that was really the thing that really kind of fascinated me about Fred Waring when I started doing the research on him, was that his emphasis was so much on what is the music communicating in terms of its lyrics. And then he said to his choir, look, you can't stand up there and look like you're
in
deadpan.
A church choir.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that was really where that idea of really performing began within a choir. And then it grew from there. He was really he was birthed by the vaudeville tradition.
Yeah, born in 1900. So he grew up and he grew up into and with all the forms of mass communication, including, I mean, he lived to 84, so he was into the computer age, if not the not really the internet age. But I remember him being referenced when I was in choir in middle school and high school for recordings with this very smooth sound, great blending. What's behind that technically?
His big thing was what we call the tone syllables, which was that you have a unified vowel, that every word and every syllable can be broken down into a series of vowels. Even a word like by has by at the end of it. And so he would almost meticulously and mathematically take a word that was maybe a quarter note long, and if it was the word by, would say, okay, the first eighth note of that is ba, or the b, and the second eighth note is ah, and then the last 16th note is e, and would break it down every single word that way. And then when he got the choir singers to sing that way, that resulting blend of everybody singing perfectly unified vowels at exactly the same time within the larger rhythm that was written in the piece was really what created that sense of diction. And of course, in the early days of radio, his big emphasis was that he really wanted people to understand the word because
they couldn't see the singers. Yeah. You couldn't tell from their expression that they were singing love or...
Exactly. Yeah.
Huh. How do you do that with limited rehearsal time? Because that's a lot of... not that you don't do a lot of preparation to start with, but how do you decide how to divide up your rehearsal time?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things that he figured out was the same is that, of course, we would have an issue with, and any other director would, is that you do have a limited amount of time. And so rather than spend your rehearsal time saying, okay, I'm going to explain how to take this word apart, he would actually write it into the music himself.
Oh.
He would break up each single word with these tone syllables, and you'd see it, like, phonetically, each word
That's
spelled
so
out.
That's so smart.
Yeah. Now, I've not been quite so resourceful as to do that on every piece, but...
Sure.
The publishers that started putting out Waring's arrangements started doing that and including it as part of the Waring sound. So that's really what we'll strive for in this performance.
Now, you have a lot of younger singers. Do they know? Did they know about Fred Waring?
No. Nobody. No. I mean, even my wife was like, Fred who? You know, so... And that was part of the educational focus of the concert was to say, okay, now we've got this great phenomenon called Glee, and all these people that are part of Glee then tour the country as kind of quasi rock stars now. If they came to Conseco and played there, everybody would go and want autographs. And in his day, Waring was the same kind of thing with the Pennsylvanians. They would tour the country as a professional group, and they were really the rock stars of their day.
And apparently, I've read about this European tour that he had, and I think it was somewhere in the 40s, and lighting effects, you know, very flashy theatricality, and that really increased his fame, and I'm sure his bookings when he got back home. Yeah.
Well, it was so unique when you compared it to a stand and sing choir, that he really had the corner on the market there, and was really the pioneer of saying, look, audiences can see you, and they really want they want to feel this music in a way that just the music can't offer, and so let's express it facially, let's change the color of the vowel so we make it really interesting for them. Let's add some sort of, in his day, minimal choreography. And now, of course, if you've seen any of the show choirs now, it's like watching a Broadway production.
Right. And I'm guessing costumes as well. He probably was a little bit of a pioneer in that. And not necessarily over-the-top costumes, but not choir robes.
Right. Yeah, they would start out in tuxes, and then maybe there'd be a women's trio that would come out in something a little more sexy. And then in the 70s, of course, the group, since it stayed around so long, you can really look at the pictures and see how it reflected the times.
Mm-hmm.
So our production will do the same thing. It'll really try to showcase some of the different styles of Waring's group when it was singing those numbers.
So sometimes when you're preparing a choir, you don't want them to listen to recordings. You don't want them to watch YouTube videos. You want to be the primary influencer. I'm guessing this is a situation where it's not the case, where you're encouraging
they'll have homework, yeah.
Your musicians
it'll be listen to this and really try to, because we really want to try to recreate the experience that the audience would have had, and we're expecting a large crowd from the generation that would have known Waring, probably a good deal of your listenership, that will be excited about the opportunity to go and sort of experience it just as they had before. So every little detail we'll try to be really insistent on making it as close to the Waring sound as possible.
Tell us about some of the repertoire. Give us a little sneak peek.
Well, Waring was a big... he was kind of the go-to guy for a lot of the composers that of the day. So Cole Porter, when he wanted to try out a song, knew he could get a good, honest, clean interpretation from Fred Waring. So he would go to him with... Like, Love for Sale was one of the examples. When Porter wrote Love for Sale, wanted to try that out, he gave it to the Pennsylvanians first and said, Waring, what can you do with this?
Cool.
So there's a lot of Cole Porter on the concert, which of course, you know, Indiana audiences love. There's also some Hoagy Carmichael, another Indiana composer, of course. There is a section about patriotic music, because that was a big part of his effort throughout his life, was really tying his music and what it meant to be free as an American. And then some other jazz standards, All the Things You Are.
One of my all-time favorites.
Such a great song.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. Have you any temptation to take something more contemporary and arrange it a la Waring?
Yes and no. I think what we're one of our partners on this concert, as we often have a some sort of other partner, is Lawrence Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
And so what their director, Gina, was really excited about was the idea of having a chance to showcase what the kids do now. And they're part of their competition show right next to what we're doing with this. And then to have an opportunity with the audience to dialogue a little bit about what are the differences here between what we're doing in Dry Bones, for instance, the Fred Waring, one of the great Fred Waring arrangements, with what the kids are doing on this arrangement of whatever from today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know that life has changed when you step into an elevator and you hear a Muzak version of something that's being played on the hip-hop station in town.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, that was fast. Didn't take long to get into the ref. What do you want to learn from this particular concert as a conductor?
I think for me, I'm always very interested in trying to show the commonalities between generations rather than the differences. We focus so much on the differences, and you hear that, you know, somebody say, back in my day when blah, blah, blah.
Hip, deep snow.
Right, exactly, which is always about how things have changed
and
gotten worse and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And what I really want to show is the commonalities between 1920s and 30s. Even down to the economic situation, which, you know, when Fred Waring and his band started, it was the heart of the Depression. And there was a real, I think part of that was the need for culture and arts and music that I think we still see now. And he had the same sort of challenges with regard to funding it. And a lot of the bands that were his contemporaries had the same issues in terms of staying afloat for that reason. So we want to show those commonalities, show the stylistic commonalities, as you mentioned, with the show choir. So we can take an example of something they're going to sing and something we sing, and then we'll point out to the audience, here's the difference. And then just to really try to get a truly intergenerational audience at the concert. So you get the fans of the current show choir and the parents of the show choir that probably were not exactly Waring fans or show choir age themselves. And then you get the generation of people that really, truly, you know, grew up on Fred Waring.
Sharon Gamble with Chris Ludwig, Artistic Director and Conductor of Encore Vocal Arts. You can hear The Magic of Fred Waring, Father of the Glee Phenomenon, on Saturday, May 19th at 8 p.m. at Lawrence Central High School, 7300 East 56th Street. Get more information at encorevocalarts.org, and you can get some inspiration from the original Fred Waring and his Young Pennsylvanians. Here's a sample.
The storm is a golden
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The notable African-American poet Etheridge Knight wasn't born in Indianapolis, but it was his home for a good part of his career. Indiana's poet laureate Karen Kovacic and her colleague Mitchell Douglas are creating a major event that IUPUI is co-sponsoring with the Etheridge Knight Festival. Called Evening with the Legends, the reading will feature performances by four major Black Arts Movement poets, Amiri Baraka, Mari Evans, Haki Mahubuti, and Sonia Sanchez. Travis DiNicola spoke with Kovacic and Douglas about the event.
For listeners who may not be as familiar with the poet Etheridge Knight and his connections with Indianapolis, tell me a bit about him and sort of how this whole project came together with the Etheridge Knight Festival, as well as the work that both of you do.
I'll start out by saying that although Etheridge Knight was born in Mississippi, he lived many years in Indianapolis and was a major poet affiliated with the Black Arts Movement. Since his death in 1991, his sister Eunice Knight Bowens has worked to keep his memory alive by sponsoring an annual festival of the arts. And this year's festival will feature what we're calling Evening with the Legends.
Yeah, and what a lineup it is. It seems like kind of the biggest one ever. I mean, each year I know there's been some festivals, events that have taken place at the Athenaeum and some other locations and such, but it seems like this year is just like huge. Mitchell?
I think when I think about this lineup, I think we would be lucky to have one of these poets.
Yeah.
But thinking about, you know, this group that has been together and active since the Black Arts Movement and been crucial in each other's lives as poets, I mean, it's exciting to think about them all coming together to share their work.
Is there any reason it came together this year in this way? I mean, it's not like some significant anniversary.
Well, actually, the planning started last year when it was the 20th anniversary of the festival.
Yeah.
But we weren't able to get all of these folks in one place last year. And so we put it off till this year. And I think there's also Haki Mahubuti, one of the poets, just came out with a book honoring his mentor and also Etheridge Knight's mentor, Gwendolyn Brooks, a poet from Chicago. And so I guess the idea behind this incarnation of the festival was to honor both Etheridge and Ms. Brooks.
I see. Okay. So the poets that are coming here, will they be, and I want to sort of talk through each one in just a moment here, but will they be primarily reading their own work? Are they going to be doing anything that you know of specifically to honor Etheridge Knight or his work, or what have they been tasked with here?
The idea is for them to share their own work, but I have this feeling that they're going to be talking about Etheridge in some way in personal relationship. I don't think that, you know, they could give a performance without, you know, mentioning him and their, you know, personal relationship.
Sure.
Because I think, you know, that's, you know, as poets living, you know, as a community helping each other, that would be a natural thing for them to do.
Well, you mentioned Haki Mahubuti. Tell me about his work.
Right. Well, he is a major poet in the Black Arts Movement who grew up in Chicago and was mentored by Gwendolyn Brooks. He is the founder of Third World Press, which was the press that Ms. Brooks migrated to later in life and has done many good things for younger poets.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wanted to hear about the other poets?
Well, sure, or anything else, if you wanted to add anything, Mitchell, about...
I think Haki's status as a publisher is what's significant, and also that Gwendolyn Brooks chose Third World Press, and that kind of showed a period where she was identifying with youth, and it was like a kind of like another phase of her career that was really important, because there was that question of why, you know, Third World Press when she had done all she had done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe she knew better than all of us that was where she should be, and was a great time, I think, for her career.
One of the poets that the name really stood out for me is Amiri Baraka. Amiri Baraka, born Leroy Jones, known not just for his poetry but also for his plays. The Dutchman is a fantastic work, and I was just very, very excited to see that he is on the lineup. Tell me a bit more about Amiri Baraka.
Well, the significant thing about Barak is that he is seen as the start of the Black Arts Movement, a poet that actually kind of kicked the movement off with his school. Initially was how it began, and then pulling other artists into the fold. And so I think when I think about Barak, I think about him also being identified as not only start of a Black Arts Movement, but also as a beat poet as well initially when you think about his early work. And so someone that's able to kind of transcend these different movements, and then also known for his essays on blues, and there's so many contributions I think that he's made as an artist on so many different levels. It's pretty amazing.
And I mean, to me, this sounds like it's kind of a rare opportunity to get to see him. I know that he's getting up there a bit in the years. I was fortunate enough; I got to hear him when I was about 15. It was at a production of The Dutchman that he had come to, and also did some readings. And it really had a profound impact on me at that age. I'm just going to say that was a while ago, and he was kind of an old guy then.
I've been fortunate to see him read three times and meet him several times. Uh-huh. And the first time I was an undergraduate at the University of Kentucky, and I was writing poems as I was watching him. And I think that's the kind of impact, you know, that he has. And he's a great performer, too. I was fortunate enough to see him last summer in Pittsburgh. So it's always, you know, an event. He is a true performer. You will see that during the reading, yeah.
Well, very cool. Very cool. I think that's just going to be great. Mari Evans. Mari's fairly well-known locally here.
That's right. You know, she is known both for her own poetry and for producing Black Women Writers, which was one of really the first critical texts about, you know, Black women poets in particular. And, you know, she has done so much for the Indianapolis community, and it's nice to see her accorded her due, and to read with these other fine artists.
And tell me about Sonia Sanchez.
And so Sonia is a poet teacher who has taught all over the U.S. She is also an important figure in the Black Arts Movement in that she pushed hard in the U.S. for greater multicultural education in colleges and universities. She was the first to create and teach a course based on Black women's literature in the U.S., so that's quite a distinction as well.
So what I think is really fantastic about this night, the celebration of Etheridge Night, the Evening with Legends, is that it's a free event. You do need to get tickets ahead of time because there is limited admission, but it is a free event, and people can get that, of course, by going to the Etheridge Night website at ekfestival.org. But there's also an opportunity you were telling me about that people can get VIP tickets ahead of time, and if they do it this weekend, right? Because they have to take advantage of this offer now, and then you can meet the poets beforehand.
That's right. General admission tickets are free, though, as you said, one does need one. But for VIP tickets, the deadline is actually April 15th.
Okay.
And people can purchase those through the website. Those are $25 per person.
And then, for that, you come earlier and you get to hang out with people.
That's right. You get to meet all the poets, chat with them, have them sign your books, you know, because books will be available at the event, of course. So it should be a good time.
Well, I think as poets too, and as a poet, when I go to see a reading, that's kind of the best part for me, is to be able to, you know, make some kind of connection after and to say thank you for your work and all the things that you've done. And so that's why the VIP reception, I think, is a great, you know, opportunity for that.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Now, and Mitchell, Karen, both of you teach creative writing at IUPUI. I'm assuming that you're encouraging your students to attend?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, lots of our students will be there in the first and second rows.
Of course.
Very good, very good. Are they any extra assignments that they have, or in terms of reading their work, or have you tried to incorporate this into your classrooms this semester? Mitchell, you're nodding your head there.
Actually, I had a unit on the Black Arts Movement. I've kind of been walking my students through schools of contemporary poetry, And we studied the Black Arts movement and these four poets in particular. So it's nice, especially if you're talking about them in class mm-hmm. on an extended basis, to then say, hey, you know, these people are here in my community and I can go see them. And particularly with Mari Evans being here, you know, that has a profound impact, I think, on students, not only to study, but make the connection of attending
sure.
A performance. Yeah.
Karen?
Yeah, same here. I mean, I frequently teach the 20th century American poetry literature class, and in the Black Arts movement has a central place in that syllabus, so for sure.
Now, let me take this back to Etheridge Night, since it is part of the Etheridge Night Festival. What's the importance for each of you, as we close this out, of Etheridge Night's work, and especially, you know, his connections to Indianapolis? Mitchell, we'll start with you.
You know, when I come to a community as a writer, I think about the writers that have been here before me and what my responsibility is, I think, as a writer to speak, you know, for this place. And I think about, you know, what Etheridge did in the context that he made. So I have to think about, you know, how can I live up, you know, to Etheridge's example? And this is corny but true, but actually before I was hired here, I started reading The Essential Etheridge Night, totally by coincidence, and I carry that book with me everywhere I go.
That's terrific.
Because there's this picture of him on the front that's looking at you like, you're like, what are you going to do, poet? You know,
yeah,
like, what is your responsibility? It's a great picture, but I look at that and I just think, yeah, what am I going to do? You know, and it motivates me truly. So I appreciate what he's done.
That's a great call to action. What are you going to do, poet? Yeah. Karen?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can live up to what Mitchell said, but I know that I have personally been inspired, I think, by Etheridge's ability to grow and change. I mean, he went through a lot of different travails as a poet, really had to push himself to constantly reinvent his work and make it new, and I've been really inspired by that. And furthermore, I've been inspired by his sister, Eunice Knight Bowens, who has put on this festival year after year, often on a pretty shoestring budget, but has been able to create miracles. So I would like to tip my hat to her as well.
Travis DiNicola with Karen Kovacic and Mitchell Douglas. The celebration of Etheridge Night, the Evening with the Legends, takes place on Thursday, April 19th at Indiana Landmark Center. For more information, visit ekfestival.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
This week on our calendar, we have some suggestions of things to do that are neat,
mm-hmm.
nice,
oh.
nifty.
Anything naughty?
Might be something naughty.
Oh.
And that's our cue that it's time for that calendar we call
What Do We Do? Anything nocturnal,
perhaps? Anything nocturnal. Actually, this particular event I'm thinking of is nocturnal. This is the last weekend to buy tickets, for the 2012 Indie Reads Alphabet Affair this year. It celebrates, surprise, the letter N. And it's coming up on Saturday, April 21st at the Hyatt Regency in the Cosmopolitan Ballroom. As usual, there's a wonderful program that includes Brenda Williams with a silent N before the B and the W. featured in the Naughty and Nice Nightclub, Scott Hoke, again, silent N's at the beginning of the S and the H.
I can see them there, sure.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
WFYI's own Scott Hoke is the MC.
That's right. And a menu that includes all sorts of amazing foods that start with N.
But no noodles.
Oh, goodness, no noodles, no noodles. Scoot on over to indiereads.org to get your tickets, because they're going fast and this is the final weekend. They need to get that catering order in, don't you know? Proceeds benefit Indie Reads, a wonderful cause.
There you go. Hey, big happy birthday to the Broad Ripple Village, which is celebrating its 175th anniversary.
Funny, it seems so young and hip.
That just kind of blows me away. So from April 17th to the 22nd, they are going to be marking the 175th anniversary of the date that Jacob Coyle in 1837 plotted a new community on the north side of the unfinished Central Canal. It's amazing. It's that old. He named the town Broad Ripple, and as they say, the rest is history. And their village association is going to be doing all sorts of things, including images of Broad Ripple, a photo scavenger hunt, as well as the 175-yard duck dash. It's a race of rubber duckies that will be taking place on the canal.
I hadn't heard
about
that.
Yep, that's on Saturday, April 21st, beginning at 3 p.m. Racing rubber ducks will be dumped into the canal and then race downstream into a net, and first, second, third place winners and all that sort of thing. The Indianapolis Fire Department dive team will be on hand to man the net, as well as guard the banks of the canal to ensure that the ducks make it to the finish line, Sharon. Just if you were wondering about that.
I was worried.
Yeah, so there's also the birthday party for Broad Ripple, and that's taking place at the Indianapolis Arts Center on Sunday the 22nd from 3 to 5. So lots of very fun events. You can find out more, including information about the scavenger hunt and the ducks, at brva.org, broadripplevillageassociation.org. Happy birthday, Broad Ripple.
Aw, that's awesome. Yeah, it doesn't seem a day over 100, does it? Hey, things that are coming up to get on your calendar now. Don't forget the annual Indian Market and Festival at the Idle Jorg. That's coming up June 23rd and 24th. Always a great opportunity to learn more about Native American cultures. Purchase artwork. There's hands-on activities for kids and grown-ups alike. Great food. And again, that's coming up June 23rd and 24th. Get it on your calendar now so you don't miss it.
The Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis is having a concert called Family Giving. That's family with a PH. It's support for worldwide charities with music from the royal family. And it includes some music by Handel, as well as some other great composers, and features the Symphonic Praise Choir. This is taking place on April 29th at 3 p.m. at the Pike Performing Arts Center on Zionsville Road.
Excellent. If you're looking, I seem to be on a theme here with family road trips. You know, at some point school is going to end. Those kids are going to come back home if they're at college, or be home more if they're in grade school or middle school or high school. There's a new collaboration called Arts Road 46. It's a joint effort of Bloomington, Nashville, and Columbus, Indiana. If you go to Arts Road 46, the numerals 46.com, you can find out about all sorts of cool events that they're cross-promoting, including on April 27th and 28th, a wildflower foray at the T.C. Steele State Historic Site. On the horizon, the Brown County Studio and Garden Tour, June 22nd through the 24th throughout Brown County. So if you love Brown County artists, get both of those events on your calendar. Again, more info at artsroad46.com.
So speaking of other cool neighborhoods, and since Broad Ripple is celebrating their 175th anniversary, Irvington's also doing some great stuff. At Book Mama's, coming up on Saturday, April 21st at 2 p.m., Deborah Lloyd will be signing her new book, Believe, and It Is True, A Story of Healing and Life Lessons. That's at Book Mama's in Irvington on the 21st, 2 p.m. And then while you're there in Irvington, you might want to go over to the Legends Classic Irvington Cafe to check out the exhibit by local artist Rad Drew. It's a photography exhibit titled In Good Light, Images of the Circle City. I've taken a preview of some of these images. Great images of Indianapolis worth checking out at the Legends on East Washington in Irvington.
Excellent. Maxime de Winter's first wife met an untimely death. Her name was Rebecca. Hi, no, thank you. That was the cue for the creepy laughter. The action takes place in the living room of Maxime's estate, Manderley, where he brings his second wife, a sincere young girl. The new Mrs. De Winter, knowing nothing of Rebecca, strives to penetrate the mystery of the impalpable presence of her husband's first wife and assume her rightful position as the mistress of Manderley. Rebecca, it's a suspense thriller by Daphne du Maurier. I know you love the thrillers and the mysteries. And it was made into a famous film. But you can see it on stage at Carmel Community Players at the CCP Playhouse at Clay Terrace, April 19th through the 29th. April 19th through the 29th. Find out more at Carmel Community Players.
Very cool. Hey, up at the Indianapolis Arts Center, the Heartland Exhibition is opening on Friday, April 20th, and this is a show juried by Heron Curator, and it features Midwest artists, in fact, 55 artists from across the region, and Paula Katz from Heron is curating the work. Almost 300 artists wanted to be a part of this, and that the Paul reviewed their artwork of and features 2D and 3D and installation art and all sorts of stuff. It should be a very interesting show. The big grand opening again is on Friday, April 20th from 6 to 8 p.m., free and open to the public. The show runs through June 10th at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
If you've ever heard the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, you know they're known for beautiful, rich chamber orchestra-sized sound, but their next concert is titled ICO Go Silent. Don't worry, no one has taken their instruments away. It's on Friday, April 20th. They are playing for...
Sorry.
That's all right. You okay? And we're back in 3, 2, 1. Don't worry, nobody's taken their instruments away. They are playing for a silent film. Not just any silent film, but a great one. The Mark of Zorro. Douglas Fairbanks is the masked hero of the people. And he battles an oppressive colonial government. So if you are a fan of swashbuckling films with live music, you need to check that out. It's Friday, April 20th at 7:30 at the Tobias Theater at the IMA. ICO Go Silent. The Mark of Zorro.
Mm-hmm. Last thing I have is it's a great title for an exhibit. It's at the IUPUI Cultural Arts Gallery at the Campus Center on the IUPUI campus, and the title of it is Coasters Optional. This is not your mother's furniture. And it is a wood-heavy show featuring 5 different furniture designers, including 3 students and 2 alumni from IUPUI. So it is a furniture show that is wood-heavy on the IUPUI campus through the end of the month.
Okay.
What do you got, Sharon?
I'm trying to figure out a segue. Well, we've been talking about some anniversaries. The Indiana State Museum is celebrating its 10th year at White River State Park. So say happy birthday
happy
when
birthday.
You go over there. I don't know, take them a cupcake.
And last thing, if you are listening to us Friday night, then please know that on Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m. at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library downtown, legendary journalist Jim Lehrer will be visiting to sign his new book, Tension City. It's a free public event. The book will be available for purchase. And if perhaps you're listening to us on Saturday afternoon, well, you can still run down there right now to the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library and check them out. Also check out their big upcoming event, The Night of Vonnegut, at VonnegutLibrary.org. And we'll be back with more things to celebrate and to see and to do and put on coasters or not on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
It's time for the beer equivalent of Beaujolais Nouveau. Yes, you guessed it. It's time to drink Bock beer with St. Benno and his goat at the annual St. Benno Fest at the Athenaeum coming up April 28th at 7 p.m. Sharon Gamble invited the Athenaeum Foundation's president, Cassie Stockamp, to tell us about St. Benno and Bock beer. Warning, this interview contains yodeling.
Let me hear your best yodel.
Oh, my. Yodel, hey-ho!
Hey, you've been practicing.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
Really good.
I can't
Suddenly
believe I just
I
did
want
that.
Swiss Miss Coco. Wait, no, I don't want that. I want good German beer.
Thank you, dear. Exactly. Chewy dark beer, yes. Oh, goodness.
All right, so we got to... Travis would be... most disapproving if I didn't ask you about the beer. I mean, you know, we both like beer. So tell me about beer and explain why we're celebrating beer at this particular time of year.
This particular time of year, it is St. Benno Fest. And Benno is the advent of the Bock beers, which means the spring beers. And the connection to the goat, it's usually represented by a goat, which they're strong-headed. They're stronger lagers. And Sun King is going to be the sponsor this year, and they're going to actually have their Bock beer. It's the Dominator Doppelbock, which means double Bock, and the Malbock, which is the Maybock. So we're trying to reinvent this festival that has been going on for many, many years at the foundation to a way that people are starting, not unlike the Beaujolais, the new wine. So this is really the new spring beer that's coming out.
And the characteristics, it's been a few years since I've had it, which means I have some years to catch up on my drinking, obviously. I remember it being a little bit sweet, kind of brown, and a little bit, not syrupy, but there's a texture.
In German, Bock means strong lager. So okay. It is a stronger beer, but at the same time, it is a spring, so it's a newer beer.
Mm-hmm.
So. And as we all know, Sun King does a wonderful job, so yes. I'm sure it will be a great, great beer. And typically, they obviously did start in Germany, in Einbeck, Germany, and it's rooted near the May Day celebration. So there's a lot of history around this. I mean, literally, we will have St. Benno will arrive with his goat in tow. You can come and see what we mean by that. And he chugs two beers to start the festival.
Well, then.
So we're telling people to come and get their yodel on. So we will have...
Please tell me there's a yodeling contest.
Yes, absolutely. There's a yodeling contest. So we, we're learning just to have fun with this, right? It's a beautiful old building,
absolutely.
Celebrating a lot of fun and diversity. And
indoors or in and out?
This will be indoors just because of that time of year. Obviously,
sure.
It's April 28th, so you never really know what we can anticipate.
Could be some rain. Who was St. Benno? Tell us about St. Benno.
St. Benno was a patron saint of Munich and Old Bavaria. And he was originally a bishop in Saxony. And when he died, and he was sainted several centuries later, Martin Luther objected to anyone in Saxony being elevated to this position. So there's, again, a lot of...
some politics there.
Oh, my gosh. It is so interesting, the politics. And they kind of kicked him out. They needed a new home. They took his bones to a Catholic church in Munich. And 30 years later, when Munich was occupied by the Protestant army of Gustav Adolf, his bones were removed, and the plague then ravaged Munich. So when they brought the bones back, the plague stopped.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
So it was elevated to then. This is really the beginning of the whole festival then.
Oh.
So, again, there is just this tradition and the rich history of this crazy festival.
Well,
so.
And a sense of rebirth as well. It's truly a spring festival.
Exactly. Good point. It's the rebirth. You always have a death before birth of essence.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So it's not particularly a family-friendly event.
probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be more beer consumption, and it will be fun, and the different beer tastings. So, but we do have other festivals coming up that are much more
you
kid,
do
much,
indeed.
Much more kid-friendly.
Yeah, and I know you'll be back to talk about... about those, and we're laughing because of something we can't tell you
That's
for
right.
a couple of months. We'll tell
surprise.
You later. We'll tell
big,
you later in the
surprise.
Season. That's right. That involves Cassie and doing something a wee bit dangerous. But back to Bennofest. So, how long has this been? This has been going on a few years.
It has over 20 years at the foundation,
wow.
the Athenaeum Foundation.
And your Saint Benno has been the same person a lot of those years. Do I recall that correctly?
You know, probably for the last 10 years, it's been the same person. We will continue that tradition, but we're bringing in different elements, and Yelp is coming involved, and Sun King. So again, we're broadening the base and appealing to a much
might
larger
have some younger
crowd.
Beer drinkers.
Yeah,
there.
Some younger beer drinkers, mm-hmm. and it really is just going to be a fun party. Pokemotion will be there. We'll have the yodel contest.
Wait, what is that?
Pokemotion. Just a fun.
Oh, the polka band.
The Pokemotion. Yeah. So they play, obviously the. Polka as well as a German oompa, but as well as some covers.
Polka is one of the most fun dances to dance.
You know, it is. And you don't really have to know how to do it.
No,
right?
it's pretty simple. We'll teach you when you get there,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So, yodeling. Everybody thinks they know how to do it.
Better with beer.
It's better with beer. How do you find qualified judges for the yodeling contest? Where do you look?
Would you like to be one, Sharon? You are more than...
That was not a leading question, by the way.
You know, that's a very good question. I'm not sure. We will probably have to assess that here rather quickly, won't
uh-huh.
we?
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone would be interested. They should contact me, right? If they have any... Yodel aficionaries that should come forth.
Any particular background. Mm-hmm. And yodelers are both male and female?
Absolutely, yes.
And remind me, I used to know this, I have this distant memory that may be completely false, that yodeling was a way to communicate over hills when you couldn't see a fellow shepherd, a fellow shepherdess, this was a way to communicate. Do I have that?
I think you're correct, but I can't validate that.
Okay.
I think you're very good, Sharon. You're...
Email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. Somebody's going to
know that. Exactly.
That's absolutely right. This is a fundraising event.
Absolutely.
Modestly priced.
Yes, it is. It's $5 in advance, $10 at the door. They can come to our website. It's that long website, athenaeumfoundation.org.
Right.
Do you want me to spell it?
I do.
athenaeumfoundation.org. So it's Athena, E-U-M, Foundation.
Oh, that's a good way to remember it.
So remember, though, the original name of the building was Das Deutsche Haus. And in 1918, because of the World War I influence, they were forced to change the name to a Greek name.
and there were, I've read that there were no fewer than four German social and athletic clubs, of which your facility was the largest.
I mean, four or five. Yeah, yeah, obviously the German influence of this town is huge.
It's enormous, but it's hard to tell. It's always interesting when people come in town and you say that and they look around and they go, I'm not seeing it. I don't see street names. Yeah. I don't see German.
Isn't it interesting? Because of the World War I influence,
right.
I think so much of it went underground. And there was an interesting New York Times article just a week or two ago someone had forwarded to me that said, the Germans are the majority in terms of ethnicity.
I saw that.
So,
that's right.
And I think
not just here. And we always assume it's the English.
No, it's in fact,
it's
I think
German.
The German population was just very close behind the Hispanic population in terms of the number of people coming into this country. So it is still a large population base and a large number of influence. So the thing that is fascinating is that in 1920, during the census period, the people that went from German heritage to English heritage went up drastically, and the Germans went down and the English went up because, again, people just really denied that heritage.
Wow. We should probably point out that you don't have to have a claim to any German heritage to events at the Athenaeum.
Absolutely. We really do recognize that this is a piece of our heritage, but we celebrate all ethnic traditions in this community. So that's what we want to be known as, a gathering place for culture. That's what the Athena means. It's a gathering place for culture.
The money collected at St. Benno Fest is for general operating, helps you keep the building in good repair.
We have to fundraise every year to keep the doors open. This wonderful old building, our heating and cooling bill every year is $250,000. just to keep it heated and cooled.
How many units do you, I mean, I'm guessing you have many, many HVAC units in there.
We do have a fairly new system. In fact, we just put a new boiler in last year, which was a rather huge undertaking. So we just have two large boilers, but very high tech now, and then one large central HVAC system on the roof. So it is all centrally controlled.
Yeah, good. There are rental opportunities at the Athenaeum.
Lots of. So everything from tenants to individual meeting rooms to theater space.
Weddings? I see weddings occasionally.
Weddings. It is an amazing old building, and that is still being used as the way it was originally designed. Originally, that space was a term variant. It was a gymnastic center. Obviously, the Y still has that physical, very physical fitness component. The Rascaler's been here since the inception. And I always laugh when everybody says there were originally 9 bars in the building.
What?
Yes. Oh, yes. So the Germans
loved
to... 9
bars?
Yes. Is that fun? So they love to physically work out hard. Then they love to play hard. And then the whole notion of the intellectual pursuit, some of the hallways are called... the neutral hallways. Because people had to have a way of free passage, free from being hit with new ideas, because there was such intellectual debate going on in that building. So that's the piece that I really am intrigued to figure out. How can I bring back that notion that we want to be the gathering place where people come and sit and talk and really engage at a high level?
That's why the Free University held classes there in the 80s.
The Free University and Normal College was there. So Normal College is now the Department of Physical Education at IUPUI. So there's a lot of academic components. And then the theater was actually built 4 years after it was built in two stages. They raised money then enough to add the theater. And it's a more ornate. If you look in the exterior of the building, you can see that it's physically a different looking structure.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So it was built 4 years later. But that was the first full theater in town. Not a movie theater, but a true theater. And the Germans brought culture. They brought dance. They brought music into this town where it hadn't been here before.
Was there low culture? Was there vaudeville there as well? Do we know?
I don't think there was vaudeville. We have it now. I love it. We've got it all going on. We've got church Sunday morning to vaudeville at night. You know, I think that's, to me, what that building is supposed to represent again. The, reflect the culture of the community, which I totally love and buy into.
Sharon Gamble with the Athenaeum Foundation's Cassie Stockham. Join the Athenaeum Foundation and the Athenaeum Turners, who partnered with Sun King Brewery, Yelp, and Nuvo to celebrate the arrival of spring beer at the St. Benno Fest on Saturday, April 28th, beginning at 7 p.m. The Get Your Yodel On contest is at 9 p.m., not surprisingly, after folks have had a chance to loosen up a bit. All proceeds from the St. Benno Fest benefit the care and maintenance of the historic Athenaeum.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli-Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I get a preview of the ACT's production of I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
I'll get the scoop on the upcoming Indianapolis Arts Center's Broad Ripple Art Fair.
And I'll find out what Broadway Across America is bringing to Indianapolis next year. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.